So, hi, I'm Aydan Imer Efendi, and today I'll be talking about TightLib, which is a privacy protection system we've been building at Duke, and its main goal is to make it easier for users to preserve the confidentiality of their sensitive state. So, this is joint work with Benjamin Mikkel and London Cox, and let me start with a simple example. I'll bring our most favorite characters, Alice and Bob, and they are having a communication over email about a sensitive subject. So Alice is an expert user, and she's very careful to save in an encrypted form any communication that she receives from Bob. Bob is well-intentioned, but at the same time, he's not an expert, and he simply saves all the communication in plain text on his hard disk. A few days later, Bob decides to install a file-sharing client. And unfortunately, Bob misconfigures the file-sharing client and shares accidentally his whole hard drive with the rest of the world. And that includes all that sensitive state that he received from Alice. So now, a few days later, somebody from the peer-to-peer file sharing network discovers Bob's sensitive content and downloads it. So as a result, we have content which was meant only for Bob's personal use being leaked onto the network. And we could wonder what Alice could have done in order to protect that leak. She could have probably encrypted the communication between her and Bob, but that wouldn't have really helped because the real problem here is that Bob misconfigured his application, and as a result, it had access to all this sensitive data. So the fact of the matter is that despite her best efforts, Alice's data is only as secure as her least competent confidant. And if you're thinking that this is a solely hypothetical scenario, consider the results from a study that was taken from CASA. So this study was conducted in 2003, and over the course of 12 hours, it discovered that there were 156 users who had their mailboxes shared. And the more disturbing result of this study was actually the fact that there were people on the network who were actively searching for the shared content, and they were downloading it. And here we can see the screenshot from one of the honeypots set up by the authors of this study that shows an inbox file being sent to somebody on the peer-to-peer network. And this is not really a problem that affects only 14-year-olds that are trying to steal music. We all have accounts, and in these accounts we share our store our files on distributed file systems. And I would really like to ask you, do you really think your files are secure? And if your answer is yes, please go back and check again. Because if you look at this screenshot, this was taken from the account of a professor in my department, and it shows that he had his deleted mails file open and an old copy of his inbox. And I just want to point out that this is an expert user, unlike Bob. This is a person with significant experience, and he knows that those files have to be protected. But nevertheless, the files were left in the open. And we all know about accidental misconfigurations that result in sensitive data being leaked on the web. Here I have an excerpt from an article that reports on the Hong Kong police leaking the personal details of about 20,000 people who have ever complained to the police about the police. And this data eventually ended up in Google's cache, and it was pretty much impossible to retrieve. All these examples are meant to show that it is difficult to control the access to our sensitive data. And when such misconfigurations take place, important data can leak. And if you look at all these examples again, data leaked without having compromised software or having stolen passwords. Data leaked because we had misconfigured applications who had access to data they shouldn't have been accessing. And the importance of such problems is actually going only to become, only going to increase, because we are all using computers pretty much for anything today. We have digitized taxes, we have personal communication, we have anything. And we're all always thinking of new ways to share this data with other people. And by sharing this data, we may be ending up in Alice's shoes. So there is definitely a need to address this problem, and we've been working on a system that its primary purpose is to make it easier for us to keep track of our sensitive state and to prevent it from being leaked accidentally onto the network. So the system is called TightLib, and it consists of three semi-independent components. So the first component is responsible for identifying what state is sensitive. And the output of this component is we have, for every sensitive state in the system, a label that indicates that it is sensitive. So given these labels, then in the next component, we will track how data that is derived from these sensitive files moves within our system. And eventually, if that data is about to leave the system, we will interpose and we'll have to decide whether to release it or not. So all of these components offer a number of interesting research challenges, but in this paper and in the current stage of our project, we have focused mostly on the second stage of TightLib, which is namely how do we, given labels on files, how do we keep on tracking how information derived from these labels moves within the system. So we would like to keep track of the movement of sensitive state within our system, and you would wonder what ways we could use to do this. So on this slide I have a number of possible techniques that we could borrow from today's literature. So we could, for example, rewrite our applications using special languages, and those applications have languages have compilers that on compile time will derive the flow of information within our application. And given the confidentiality policy supplied by the programmer, the compiler can decide if data is about to leak or not. These are great approaches, they work fine, but unfortunately we'll have to rewrite our applications so they're not compatible with legacy software. Other possible solutions, another possible solution is to require some changes from the hardware. And the idea here is that we can introduce new instructions in the instruction set, and we can have new primitives such as shadow memory, and those instructions and primitives will help us track how sensitive data moves within the system. Again, this is a great approach, but the problem is that we have to wait for this new hardware to arrive, and it is unknown when and how or ever it will actually be around. So somewhere in between, as a compromise, we can say, okay, we don't have this, this hardware, but we can emulate it. Unfortunately, emulation is quite expensive, and it usually results in about an order of magnitude performance penalty for all operations that take place in our system. So one of the contributions of our work has been to design a new approach to tracking sensitive state and how it moves within a system. And as a matter of fact, this new approach presents a new point in the design space, because we do not require changes to the, to the applications or to the hardware. Instead, we require minor modifications to the operating system. And the doppelganger process is the main abstraction and the tool of our approach. You can think of it as a copy of an original process. It is very similar to that process, but but when the original process performs a read to a sensitive file, the doppelganger actually receives a scrubbed version of this file. And the scrubbed version is a version of the original data from which we have tried to remove some of that sensitive content. I'll come back to scrubbing a little bit later and you will see what it actually means. So now we have the original process, which we have given the sensitive data, and we have the doppelganger process to which we have given the scrub data. And those execute in parallel, and we monitor the execution, and eventually they will make an output. And when this happens, what we will do is we will take the output of the original process and compare it to the output of the doppelganger process. If those are the same, we will conclude that the data is unlikely to have derived from a read from that sensitive file, and we'll label the data as not sensitive. However, if the outputs are different, it is likely that the data has derived from the sensitive file, and we will label it the output as sensitive. So just to make this process a little bit clearer, I'll walk through a simple example. So here is our process. We issue a request to read from a file, and the file happens to be not sensitive, so we return the data back to the process. A few minutes later, we issue a request to read from another file, and this file happens to be sensitive. So what we would do here is we will create an identical copy of the original process. Now this is our doppelganger, and we will return the data, but the original process gets the original sensitive data, and the doppelganger process gets the scrub data. So now both processes will execute, and the execution will change some, will trigger some changes in their internal state, and some of those changes may be due to the fact that they read data from these files. So now, at a later time, we will have an output operation. And what we will do is, again, we'll look at the outputs. And in this case, those output buffers are the same, and which makes us conclude that those output buffers actually probably derive from the first read, which was from the not sensitive file. hence we will label the data as not sensitive. But in a subsequent write, the output buffers will be different. And we will derive that those buffers, we will conclude that those buffers have derived from the read from the sensitive file. And hence we will label them as sensitive. So this concludes my introduction. And next I will tell you what it actually takes to run doppelgangers so that we can track how sensitive state moves within the system. I'll give you an example of a real application running on top of our system. And I'll tell you a little bit about our current prototype and preliminary evaluation. And finally, I will conclude. So the key technique that we use in TiteLib to track the propagation of sensitive state is to detect divergence between an original and a doppelganger process. And we define divergence as both processes producing different outputs. And we really need this process so that we can have the output of the original process compared to the output of a doppelganger process. And when those outputs are different, the result will be marked as sensitive. So we have to be very careful here when we introduce divergence. And in general, there are two types of sources of divergence. We have deliberate sources. And those are sources we intentionally change the inputs of both processes so that eventually we can detect some differences. But while those processes are executing, there can be also sources of potential divergence, which, for example, is the kernel, because the process interact with the kernel and they execute system calls or they receive signals, and those can alter the execution of both processes. And the main technical challenge so far in our work has been to make sure that we can control the potential sources of divergence. So in the next slides, I will actually walk through each of the sources of divergence, and I'll give you a little bit more details. And I just want to make a disclaimer that I will omit some of the details which are already in the paper, and if you're interested, please look at the paper or talk to me later. So we introduce divergence by a process which we call data scrubbing. And the idea here is that we will take a file, and we'll try to remove the sensitive contents from this file. We have to be very careful when we do this because that file may have certain invariants that have to be preserved about its structure. Think about an XML file. And to this end, we have the notion of a default and a type-specific scrubber inside TiteLib. So the default scrubber is very simple. It replaces every byte with another random byte. But the type-specific scrubber has specific knowledge about the particular type of file that it is scrubbing, and takes actions to preserve the invariants of this file. So here is an example of what the scrubber for an email message would look. We have an email message, and the email message has a number of headers. And those headers are very important because they have certain meaning to the email client. And here is a possible way to scrub this email file. And as you see, I preserved the fact that the from and the to fields were email messages, and I randomly offsetted the date. I just want to point out that this is one way to scrub this file, but it is a way that preserves the invariance of and the structure of the email message. And this whole business of scrubbing data should make you feel a little bit uncomfortable because it is very likely that while we are doing this, we also affect the control flow of the application. And it is true that in some cases, we may never be able to scrub the input data of certain applications. But in our experience, we have actually observed a number of applications for, which are what we call them content blind. And the idea here is that those applications simply read a file of the disk, then they encode this file into a certain format, and then they dump it over the network. Those applications are very likely to leak sensitive data. Pretty much all the examples that I gave earlier about the peer-to-peer file sharing clients, distributed file systems, and web servers fall exactly into this category. And those applications are also very important. So an essential part of our actual future work is to understand what are the limits of scrubbing. But in this particular stage of the project, we have worked with applications for which scrubbing hasn't really been a problem. So we have both processes, and we have scrubbed the input data of the doppelganger process, and now they're executing in parallel. And as I mentioned, while they execute in parallel, we can have interactions with the kernel. And these interactions can introduce divergence. we have to be very careful to make sure that whatever divergence we detect between the original and the doppelganger process is only due to the initial input data rather than to all these other interactions. So we have to be very careful with system calls and signals, for example. So a lot of efforts we spend in Tightly on making sure that those interactions with the kernel do not introduce any essential divergence. So for example, we try to make sure that the original and the doppelganger observe the same sequence of events, they receive the same results from system calls, and they also have identical signal delivery. I will describe what we do about system calls, and the paper addresses the problem of signals. So we have system calls, and if you take all of the system calls, we can roughly classify them into two categories. We have system calls that perform reads, and we have system calls that perform updates. The system calls that perform reads can again be roughly subdivided into two subgroups. We have reads that are from constant data sources, and those reads have the property that multiple invocation of the system call will pretty much return the same result. An example is the get user ID system call. And for those system calls, we don't really have to do anything, and we can simply allow the original and the doppelganger to execute independently. However, we have data sources, and it's actually system calls, which are non-constant, so which means that multiple invocations of this system call produce different data. An example is reading from the clock or reading from a socket. And so with these system calls, we have to be very careful, because if you allow both processes to execute independently, then they will introduce divergence, which will not be due to their input data. So what we will do in this case, we will introduce produce a consumer buffer with each of these data sources, and we'll treat the original process as the producer, and the doppelganger will be the consumer. We also have to be very careful when the doppelganger reads data from this buffer. If the data happens to be sensitive, we'll also have to scrub it. So this is what we do about reads, and let's see what actually happens when the process tries to do an update. When we do an update, we have, again, similarly to the reads, two categories. We can have updates to kernel state. An example here is the bind system call. The importance about the bind system call is that, by definition, only one process is allowed to take control over a certain port. So if you allow both the original and the doppelganger to execute independently, one will succeed and the other one will fail. So what we'll do here is we'll introduce a barrier at the entry point of the system call, and we'll make sure that only the original process executes. We will block the doppelganger until the original executes, and then the doppelganger will obtain the result of the execution of the original and send it back as if it actually executed the system call itself. And now this takes us to the most important and actually most interesting type of process kernel interaction, which are updates to non-kernel state. These are important because these are the primary way by which we detect whether an output is sensitive or not. So the idea here again is similar. So we will synchronize and we'll compare the buffers. And if the buffers are the same, as I said earlier, this means that output is not sensitive. So we'll simply allow the original process to perform the write, and the doppelganger will wait, and eventually we'll send the result back as if it actually executed the write. But now let's see what happens if the buffers are different. So as I said earlier, different buffers translate into sensitive outputs. And what we will do here depends on the actual destination. So if you're trying to write data to an object which is controlled by the kernel, for example, we can maybe write into a pipe, to a local socket, or to a file on the local disk, we will transitively mark this data object as sensitive, so that if somebody else performs a read at a later time from this object, we can again perform the same analysis and keep on tracking this, how data propagates. However, if the data if the destination we're trying to write is beyond the control of the kernel, for example, we can have a file on the remote file system, or we're simply trying to dump some data over the network, we will have to invoke a confidentiality policy, which will tell us what action to take. And just to put this a little bit more into a concrete example, let's take a look at an application which is running on top of Tightlib. So in this case, we have the SSHD server, and it is waiting for connections from the network. So it receives a connection from a client, authenticates the client, and creates a shell process for this client. And from now on, the shell will connect to talk to the client using directly the socket. So the client now issues a copy for a request for a given file, and the shell, what it will do now is will fork another process, which we'll call worker, which will be responsible for fetching the contents of the file. And the worker and the shell will communicate using a local socket. So now the worker accesses the file, and the file happens to be sensitive. So Tightlib will create a doppelganger of the worker process, and will give the doppelganger scrub version of the data. The worker and the doppelganger of the worker eventually will perform a write to the network socket, and at this point we'll determine that the output buffers are different, so we'll mark the network socket, the local socket, excuse me, a bit, as transitively as sensitive. So as a result, when the shell performs a read to consume the data from that object, we will create a doppelganger of the shell, and we'll give the doppelganger of the shell a scrubbed version of the data that's stored in the local socket. Both processes will execute, and eventually they will perform a network write. And here, the two things will be detected. First, the output buffers will be different, so we will know that this is a sensitive output. But we'll also determine that this is a write to the network, so we will have to invoke the confidentiality policy to tell us what actual action to take right now. So we have detected a potential leak of information, and now we are calling into the policy to tell us what action to take. The policy can perform a number of computations, for example, consult a database or that looks at previous invocations of the policy and determines what action to take. But eventually, the policy will come back to us and will instruct us to take one of those following actions. So it can either tell us to send the sensitive data onto the network, we could terminate the process that tried to send the sensitive data, we could close the socket, or we could simply send the scrubbed data. A more important alternative that we have been experimenting with, and something that we believe is very specific to our system, is called process swapping. And the idea here is that we can swap the doppelganger for the original process. So to understand why this makes sense, consider a peer-to-peer file sharing client. So you've been waiting for a while to download this file. You've been waiting on queues, and finally you start downloading. But as you're downloading, somebody else from the peer-to-peer file sharing client network tries to access a sensitive file on your system. So now you're facing a dilemma. Should you cancel your download and leak that information, or should you continue downloading but preserve your information? So I want to point out that in our case, the doppelganger has never seen any sensitive state. So we could actually achieve both goals by simply swapping the doppelganger for the original process. And this process swapping may have other applications which we plan to explore in future work. So if you, here are a few words about the current status of our system. It is based on Linux 2.6.13. We currently support only single-threaded applications, but work is in progress to handle multi-threaded applications. We can handle signals, pipes, local sockets, network sockets, GUIs. We had to modify the local file system a little bit so that we can store sensitivity labels with each file. And we also had to make a number of changes to the kernel, which involved modifying a lot of internal data structures. We changed some of the system calls so that we can implement the principles I described a little bit earlier. And we also had a new system call that allows us to toggle the sensitive labels on each file. And if you remember, one of our main objections to emulation was that emulation introduces significant overhead. So here on this slide, I'll have the results of running SpecWeb 99 benchmark on an Apache server that is running on top of Tightlib. So on the x-axis here, we have the number of simultaneous clients, and on the y-axis, we have the observed throughput in the request per second. In the first case, we will mark all files as not sensitive, so no doppelgangers will be produced, and this will be the baseline case. And here is the resulting throughput. Next, what we will do is we will run the benchmark again, but this time we'll mark all files as sensitive, and not only this, but we will keep the doppelganger forever running with the original process so that we can achieve somewhat of a worst case scenario for the doppelgangers, because now the doppelgangers will be present throughout the whole execution of the benchmark, and all files will also be marked as sensitive. And here are the results for running with the doppelgangers. And as you can observe, the resulting overhead is within 5%. Which shows that for this particular type of application and workload, doppelgangers can actually help us protect the confidentiality of sensitive data at a very modest cost. And to sum up, I have tried to make the point that it is very difficult to control the access to sensitive information. There is a lot of sensitive state and many applications, and there is a growing burden on the user to make sure that all access control lists are set up properly. We have been looking at one aspect of this problem, which is given labeled data that marked as sensitive or not. How do we keep on tracking this data movement within the system? The main abstraction we introduced is a doppelganger process, which is a copy of an original process, but it has perturbed inputs. And the main challenge of running doppelgangers is to make sure that any divergence that we observe is due only to the initial input data. Our preliminary evaluation has shown that doppelgangers can be efficient for data transfer applications, and for those applications, the overhead is within 5%. This concludes my talk, and now I can take your questions.
Check. Vytautas Valančius, Georgia Tech. So I like doppelganger concept in general. It's very cool, and I think we'll see lots of research in the future using that stuff, I guess. But the motivation as it's presented in your paper, it's pretty strange. Like, so you use one single bit to declare which information is sensitive. And the motivation that you present in the very beginning and even in this slide to show that, let's say, inbox files that you want to prevent them to be, you know, got by some arbitrary attacker by BitTorrent or something like that. So what happens now if you set it as sensitive, then you cannot forward your emails to your peers, I mean, through your email program.
Well, that's not entirely true, because as I said, when we detect that the sensitive data is about to leak, we will have to, mm-hmm. we'll call into a policy module. And mm-hmm. in this particular example, the policy module can have certain allowances for forwarding email to maybe mm-hmm. a number of people that you trust that they will actually protect your content.
Okay, so the policy module would contain application lists that trustable or not. And then it's similar question, you know, like, but I guess it's not maybe what you should address in this technical paper, is that if user is not clever enough to, if he's clever enough to configure all of his system to be shared by Kazaa, then he will probably, you know, it's the same issue, but it's policy.
So I want to point out that in this particular work and the current stage of our project has been focused primarily on given label data, how mm-hmm. do we efficiently track the propagation of data mm-hmm. and data derived from the sensitive files in our system. And we're just starting now to look at the other two components of the system, which is how do we identify what state is sensitive mm-hmm. and how do we come up with policies that do not bother the user, for example, too much and can do the right thing. Mm-hmm. These are all areas of future research.
Okay, so, and one more short question. So you have the scrubbing concept let's say, configuration files or headers. You need to skip scrubbing for some parts. So don't you see that as a huge obstacle to wide implementation because you would need support all possible headers of almost everything?
Well, as I said, it is possible that for some applications, we will never be able to scrub their input files so that we can run them safely on tightlib without generating false positives. But our experience so far has been with applications for which this didn't really matter. And for those applications, as I pointed out, they simply read data, encode it, and send it onto the network. It is part of our future work to examine to what extent we can actually push the scrubbing concept so that we can also deal, for example, with some minor perturbations of control flow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Amin Vedat, UC San Diego. So I like this work, and relative to the comparison to related work, I have a question in the sense that I don't think you're giving tightlib enough credit because the related efforts, if they ever have a process that takes sensitive data as input, they will mark all output from the processes as sensitive. Whereas what you're trying to do is basically eliminate some of the false positives, it seems, where you say, okay, you know what, I took the sensitive file as input, but it didn't matter. I have some output and I don't need to mark it as sensitive. So some of the problems that the related efforts have is they can explode the set of data that is sensitive, which can be a big problem for these other efforts. But I was hoping that you could tie this back to your motivating scenarios. In other words, the simple approach of just marking everything as sensitive would have worked for the three motivating scenarios you put up front. But can you comment on some cases where you really need the doppelganger approach of making sure that not everything is sensitive?
So here's a simple example. So I guess what you were saying is what we can do is we can, once an application touches a sensitive file, we can mark any output that this application produces as sensitive, correct? So consider, for example, a web server. And this web server serves many clients. And if we follow this example, this policy, what we will do is the first time somebody touches a sensitive file, then we will mark all the outputs from this web server as sensitive. And this may unnecessarily penalize other clients who are perfectly legally downloading things that we have shared.
Thank you.
So this is a very creative way to detect information flow. and also to do automatic declassification. It's something that's actually very difficult even in languages like GIF, where somebody actually has to come in and do things by hand. So I'm hoping or wondering if you could characterize the types of applications. I mean, clearly the overhead is low, but you didn't really characterize the applications for which this is a good fit. And what makes it easier to write a Scrubber, or what makes it harder to write a Scrubber? I think I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Well, what I'm afraid is that a full answer to a question requires us to have more experience with running a more diverse set of applications on top of TiteLib. And so far, we've been running applications which are blind to the type of content that they are serving. In general, what it takes to scrub a file, it will be very dependent on the particular type of file. So for example, for certain XML files, it would be very easy to scrub them simply by Xing certain attributes. But for other files, as I said, let's say, if you're reading, a key file, an SSH key file, if you have marked this file as sensitive, it is unlikely that you can actually scrub it and produce a valid input to that application. So I guess my answer here is that we will have to see, collect more experience with the system, and then I can probably tell you more.
Okay, let's thank Aidan again.